Now, for the next couple hours here on Coast to Coast AM, we're going to be talking with Brad Willis. He's a former NBC war correspondent. We're going to talk about his lifestyle, what he did to change it, and why. Thanks for staying with us. Now, let me tell you about Brad Willis, former NBC war correspondent, who went on to places like the Soviet-occupied Afghanistan, South Africa. He has been really just, now, coming from the NBC ranks myself, he has been just an incredible reporter over the years. But things changed, and he's going to talk about that. Brad, what a story. Welcome.
George, it's good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
What are you doing these days now?
Well, something I never dreamed I would have done, a complete turnaround, and now into mind, body, and spirit medicine.
All of this based on what had happened to you. We're going to get into that. But because of your war correspondence background, you've been in Afghanistan. I want to take just a few moments here, Brad, and ask you about that situation. Why in the heck do you think we're still there? What's going on?
Well, you know, I went there in 1986 during the Soviet occupation, and one of the few Western journalists to be inside. I was up in the mountains with the freedom fighters, the Mujahideen. At that time, they would ultimately form Al-Qaeda, and
which
is our enemy. At that time, they were our friends because we were in the Cold War with the Soviet Union. This was the most rugged country I had ever seen in my life. These people walked up and down mountains all day long like powerful goats. They were tough and sinewy, and throughout all the centuries, no one had ever successfully invaded and occupied their country while the whole rest of that region had been taken over by outside forces. Soviets went in. They were one of the most powerful, mighty armies in the history of the world, along with us at the time, and it didn't work out too good for them. And I don't know why we went in again, too. And here we've been bogged down in the longest war in the history of the United States, and I don't really think it's going to turn out very well. I think once we're out of there, they will go back to being very hard-lined, to being our arch enemies, and a lot of that will have been for naught. I think we'll look back and wonder, ultimately, why we did it outside of just hitting Al-Qaeda hard after 9/11.
Yeah, I think so, too. You were born in Los Angeles. That's where I'm broadcasting from right now.
I was, a long time ago.
And you know, you had a similar career as I did. You went up the television ranks, right? You started in California, went to Dallas, Boston, worked for a great television station there, WBZ. How did the move to the network occur?
Well, as I got out of Afghanistan and I started to cover drug wars down in South America, the network was down there covering a big summit with George Bush I. And I got to know them, and they liked my work, and ultimately I had an invitation to join the Miami Bureau covering the chaos in Latin America, Nicaragua, and El Salvador, more stories in Cuba and down in South America. And on that journey along the way came the Persian Gulf War, and I was one of their frontline correspondents for that.
And all of a sudden, something happened to you. You suffered a serious break to your lower back. How in the heck did that happen?
Well, you know, it was a dark secret that I held for the longest period of time. Right after I came out of Afghanistan, I took a rare vacation because, George, I was as type A as they come. If you looked up type A in the dictionary back then, I think you would have seen my picture. And I came from a middle-class background, and suddenly I'm in this business with a lot of people who are from better universities than me, a higher social ladder, and I realized I wasn't any smarter or more talented than any of them, but I felt I could work longer and harder than anybody else, and that's what I set about doing. So after Afghanistan, I took a rare vacation down to Paradise in the Bahamas, and the very last night, big storm came up. I was on a very remote island, and I was battening down storm windows. I thought it might be a hurricane. The last window, the handles wouldn't twist. They were corroded. They broke, and I fell off a ledge about 12 feet, and I cracked my lowest vertebra, technically a broken back. But I got up. I gritted my teeth. I'm going to work longer and harder than anyone else. And I kept going for 7 years. Hiding the incredible pain that I was in with painkillers, muscle relaxers, drinking a little more heavily every night, because I knew my career was on a rocket after Afghanistan. I was going somewhere in a career that completely identified who I was and gave my life all of its meaning. And I knew there were 1,000 well-qualified people waiting to take my seat on that rocket. And I was afraid if I stepped back for a second, I'd never get back. So I just kept thinking, tomorrow I'll get better. Think of all the war-wounded children you've seen. Their plight is so much worse than yours. Buck it up. Tomorrow never came. I had Africa through chaos and revolutions in South America and elsewhere. And finally, after the Gulf War, where I was on all the front lines, NBC put me in charge of Asia. I was living in Hong Kong. It was such a dream. I felt so fulfilled, like I was really making a contribution to the world. And 7 years after that fall from that ledge, I'm in Manila, Philippines, covering a story, and I lean over to look at videotape, and that crack split wider open and started to impinge on my spinal cord. Well, I howled like a feral cat and blacked out.
I don't blame you.
I was brought back to San Diego for major back surgery, and it failed. I was declared permanently disabled. And suddenly I found myself going from a global life that completely identified who I was, gave my life meaning, to being confined in a body brace that went from my sternum down to my hips with a metal band running down my left leg strapped to my knee. I couldn't sit up to eat a meal. I hobbled with a cane. I was in even worse pain because of the failed surgery. And now,
And depressed probably?
Oh, my God, Vicodin, Valium, Prozac, Ritalin, and 3 or 4 other medications. I had lost my identity, and I set about, really, I became a master of self-pity. I became a master of anger and fear and depression and running away from myself as fast as I could.
But you know what? Who would blame you?
Well, I would have liked to have thought that I could have handled it better, but I didn't. Again, I lost my identity. I lost that thing that gave my life meaning. And I also felt in the prime of my life and in my 40s that I had no way to ever take care of myself, no way to sustain anything. So I felt emasculated.
And I mean, it was a double whammy to you. I mean, one, your health was falling apart, and two, this career that, you know, once you've been in this business, you strive to be the best, as you've just said, that was gone, right?
It was gone, and it was never coming back, and it was like I was staring into a dark void 24 hours a day. And it's also hard to go from a global life and also to covering wars and seeing things around the world to being back in America where things are very different. I think that's one of the reasons that a lot of our troops that come home have PTSD.
Yeah, you're right. It's too much.
You know, it's too much to just go back to normalcy when you've seen so much. It's just a difficult transition.
There should be some buffer for them somewhere.
Yeah, there should be. There should be more buffer.
All right, so at what point and what did you do to try to pull yourself back together?
Well, honestly, I didn't do much. I just felt that everyone else was to blame and not me, and that I needed a special dispensation because of my pain. Because chronic pain, it really changes you. Anyone that's ever faced it knows that it twists your personality. It turns you dark. And it gives you an excuse to be that way on some level. But then, 4 years into this, sort of miraculously, my only child, my little boy, was born. And it gave me hope. It gave me light and identity. And I thought, well, I'm going to be a daddy, even if I can never kick a soccer ball and carry him on my shoulders. And I started to dive into that as a new identity. And 3 months into it, I got sick. And I didn't get better. And I didn't get better. Tests after tests after tests. Finally, they diagnosed stage 4 cancer.
Oh, my God. Are you being on top of everything else?
The universe was trying to get my attention.
Well, who did you... You must have done something to somebody somewhere. Karma, you know what karma's like. But, no, I mean, I'm being somewhat facetious, but what kind of bad luck could you have?
I know. I always thought, why me? It was from exposure to depleted uranium used by American forces to pierce Iraqi tanks. I'd been exposed years ago. Started in my throat, metastasized throughout my lymphatic system.
Like dust came in as dust, didn't it?
Yeah, radiation. And, you know, the doctor said, you won't live 2 years. Write your will. Morphine was added to my arsenal of medications. I started drinking not just at night, but in the daytime. I felt so much guilt that I was leaving this little boy's life who was really my touchstone to reality. And I started to plummet even further down into this abyss.
And deep into this abyss, what did you see?
Well, I saw the dark side. I saw all of the human suffering that I had seen around the world suddenly embodied in me. What I had reported on for so long, I was suddenly directly experiencing. And along the way, I alienated just about everybody in my life, except that little boy. He was the only time that I could be present and loving was when I was with him. I don't even know how his mother, my wife at the time, held in so long. He turned 2 years old just before the year 2000, just before Christmas, and he came to me, and I realized I'm laying on the couch like I always am. Kids, hold on.
You had to, right?
Yeah, I had to. I couldn't get up. And he came to me, and I realized he finally got it in his own little two-year-old way. Something's really wrong with Daddy. And he trembled. He got a little tear in his eye, and he said three words. It changed my whole life. Get up, Daddy. And it hit me in a place that I didn't know I had, like right in my chest. And for the next 3 weeks, as the year 2000 dawned, I had this mantra going through my head, get up, Daddy. But how? Broken back, failed surgery, dying of cancer. Get up, Daddy. But how? Finally, in the new year, I decided with my family, I need to detox off all these meds. They have totally destroyed my soul. Maybe one day someone will tell my boy, your daddy died with dignity. That's how he answered your plea. Mm-hmm. That's how he got up. So I checked into a detox ward down here.
It was that bad.
It was that bad. I was a few months away from saying goodbye forever. By this time, I kept eating like a foreign correspondent, meat and potatoes diet. I was 225 pounds.
Oh, my God.
Massively overweight, dark circles under my eyes, deranged from all these medications. And I went cold turkey after what was then 14 years of heavy med in the hospital detox ward. I can tell you, as a former journalist, all the demons in Dante's Inferno are real because they checked in with me.
They were with you. Yeah.
They were there tearing at my flesh.
Did you think at that point things can't get any worse?
I thought, what am I doing? I don't think I'll ever crawl out of here. Oh, God, help me. I didn't even know what my sense of God was or higher power was. It's just, oh, help me. It was a complete humiliation, a complete release of all that ego stuff that I had in my life.
So when you're in detox, Brad, tell me what's going on there at that point.
Well, the pain's worse because I'm off the meds, and I've sort of shut everyone out of my room, and I'm just laying in there in the darkness, and these demons are swirling around the world, and I'm sick as you can possibly be. I don't even want to describe what that was like, the sickness and the filth. And 7 or 8, 9 nights of this, I couldn't count.
Could you walk at that time?
Well, I could assisted or with a cane and with my body brace on, but not just on my own.
Did somebody have to help to get you up?
They had to help and carry my arm. And especially now, I'm really destabilized. I'm dizzy. Everything's spinning around because medications don't just stop affecting you when you stop taking them.
Right.
Sometimes it can take years to wear off. So I think I was in a very delusional state, like I had just been through a major war and been the victim, and here I was, just dazed and confused. I finally crawl out of there. No idea what I'm going to do. No idea whatsoever. And they came to me and they said, have we got a deal for you? We've started this new experimental pain clinic. We can't help you with the cancer, but maybe we can keep you off the meds and off the alcohol. And we're blending ancient Eastern healing modalities with modern Western holistic techniques. George, I didn't understand a word of that. I just said, yeah. I'm all in. And that began this journey into a new life.
This Eastern method of healing, of course, we're going to get into all of this, I guess, got you to even change your name, sort of, right?
It did. It did along the way, a few years into it along the way. Just kind of a symbol that I'm committed to this.
Bhavaram. That's you?
Bhavaram, pure state of being in the heart. Let me be the first one to say I'm not always there, but that's what I aspire to. It's a Sanskrit name from India because it's the ancient Indian science of yoga, which is so much more than the postures we all believe in, that, you know, that we all think of as yoga in the West. It's so much more. It's a complete science of how to be a human being. And it was through that that I ultimately changed. And I sort of figure, well, if Mark Twain was once Samuel Clemens and Lady Gaga was once somebody else and the Pope takes a different name, well, give me a break. I can too.
So when you were going through this, you detoxed yourself. Was that difficult?
It was incredibly difficult. It was dark nights of the soul every night, howling into the darkness of my own depression and despair, having free-falling, having no idea what the outcome would be, what would result, that I would probably die anyway of cancer, and I was lost.
At what point through this detox program did you realize, I'm winning this?
I didn't realize till that first day in that pain center. The very first day, I took a hotel nearby the hospital where the pain center was. And the very first day, they had me do biofeedback. They hook up electrodes to your body to take your skin temperature, your heart rate.
Monitor everything.
Brain waves, everything onto computer screens. And they put me in a big recliner. I was pretty good at being in a recliner. And put headphones on me. And the soothing voice came on and started to take me on a guided visualization meditation with natural soothing imagery, like an inner journey. And I think for the first time in my life, I began to relax. And at the end of 20 minutes, all my baselines were different, highly improved.
I mean, are you still on the drugs at this point?
No, I'm detoxed off the whole thing, went the whole cold turkey bit.
Did you get the shakes and all that?
Oh, the whole thing, more than that. You know, the tremors, the throwing up, everything, you know, out of all areas.
Not easy.
Not easy.
But
not
then
crazy.
You started feeling better, at least that portion.
Well, I knew when I did that biofeedback that I had to take charge and not let my life just happened to me or the medical system.
Hold on for a second, Brad. We're going to hit the break. You've been in the business. You know what that's all about. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back with Brad Willis. His book, by the way, Warrior Pose, How Yoga Literally Saved My Life. So when you're going through the detox, at this point, did you feel like you were going to die?
I didn't think I was going to make it. It was that biofeedback that gave me the first hope, that taught me that my mind directly affects my body, that the thoughts that I put in there have a physical impact, as showed up on those computer screens and that biofeedback when they played me that visualization. That was the moment that I said, whatever chance I have, whatever length of life I have left, I have to take charge. I have to chart my own course and find some power inside of myself and no longer just let this happened to me, no longer let Western medicine just give me pills and cut me with surgeries that destroy my back and burn me with radiation that doesn't heal me. I have to take charge.
So once you moved into this program, primarily yoga, tell us how this worked for you and what did you do?
Well, about a month into this journey at this pain center, I was first doing these mind-body techniques and the biofeedback.
You're off the drugs. At this point, the drugs
I'm off the drugs. I can barely walk down the hall without my cane. I'm just trying to do that, to hobble along and try to support myself. And they say, you're ready for therapeutic yoga. Now, I knew about yoga, but I had never tried it. I was the cynical, jaded ex-foreign war correspondent. To me, that was all hooey. I walk into this yoga room, and it was like Pep Daddy. I had this, another awakening. Somehow I knew something was there. There was this deeper knowing inside of me that was beyond my rational mind and my ego. George, I was so stiff, even in my prime, before my broken back. My toes looked like they were in China. And now I couldn't even get my legs up the wall or do anything. But it felt so good just to breathe and relax and let go. I went back to my hotel. I had them FedEx some texts on yoga, and I started reading the ancient text, thousands of years old, and I discovered this is more than these postures. This is the mind, body, spirit science of how to be a human being, and I started to integrate some of those practices into my life, telling myself a different story about who I was, trying to move from all those dark thoughts of self-pity, fear, and anger, and depression to hope, compassion, acceptance, forgiveness. Things started to change very, very slowly. And a few weeks into this, the clinic closed. The hospital said, this is alternative. We don't believe in it. We will not. The insurance companies,
Didn't they know that going into it?
No, I misspoke. It was the insurance companies who
said, oh, they did it.
This is alternative. We don't believe in it. We won't pay for it. The clinic had to close. I knew three people in the program. Two of them went back to medication, to alcohol. My closest friend in the program took his own life. I went home and built a yoga room in my house. And I called it my Himalayan cave because the ancient practitioners of yoga used to crawl into caves and spend a long time in introspection and silence. And that's how this wisdom came to pass. I started practicing 8, 10, 12 hours a day. Some very beginning yoga postures, breath work, meditation. I changed my meat and potatoes diet to veganism. I called it organic chemotherapy. Massive fasting and other physical purification.
And you're doing all this on your own?
All this on my own. And in the process, I took 80 pounds off my body. I called it 80 pounds of toxic food.
Over what period of time, Brad?
Oh, within 6 months.
Amazing.
And I took 1,000 pounds of darkness off my mind, off my emotional body. And I started thanking the back pain, thanking the loss of this incredible career that identified me, thanking cancer, saying, you're the catalyst for whatever positive change I might be able to make in my life.
And what's going on with the cancer at that point?
Well, we don't know, because I'm not going to doctors anymore.
Oh, really?
My throat bleeds sometimes, and I can't swallow. Sometimes I'm mute, I feel pain.
Then or
now? I feel that I'm frightened that, okay, this is it. Okay, this is it.
At that point or now?
At that point.
At that point, okay.
And I would crawl out of my yoga room to be with my boy, get him to preschool or down for a nap, crawl back into the room. I started getting up at 3 in the morning and practicing, sometimes going to midnight, because this was a lifeline for me. Not something everybody has to do, but this was my lifeline. Studying, meditating, visualizing, positive thinking, yoga postures, breath work. 2 years into it, I was healed and whole. 80 pounds lighter, more flexible than I had ever been in my life, and completely cancer-free.
How did you go after the cancer? How did that happen? Or did it just come as part of the entire program?
Came as part of the entire program. It was this organic vegetarianism. We now know there's a whole lot of science that shows that the protein in vegetables shrinks tumors and the protein in meat and dairy grows them. Fasting, taking body weight off because a lot of the stuff in my body was really toxic. Deep breathing, which oxygenates and purifies and detoxifies as well. And when you change your mind, you know, when you're dark, like I was, and even in our daily culture, in this very fast-paced society we live in, we're under a lot of stress. Everybody knows that word, stress. And we're in a state of fight or flight. And we have adrenaline and cortisol coursing through our bodies, and we know that that diminishes our immune system and diminishes our capacity to metabolize the nutrients from whatever our diet happens to be. And when you anchor into positive thoughts, you start creating things like oxytocin, serotonin, dopamine, anandamide, and this is the chemistry of inner healing. The immune system becomes strong. You metabolize better. You know, the body wants to heal, but we usually don't give it a chance. We're so stressed out, even if we're doing the right things for the physical body, our emotional body is pulling us down. So all of that together ultimately helped me manage the pain, and the cancer went away, and it's never come back.
Were you in shock that the cancer was gone? Were the doctors in shock? I bet they were.
They were. I went back to write the memoir, Warrior Pose, How Yoga Literally Saved My Life. And I thought I'd have another checkup because I was actually mentioning my oncologist in the book, and I wanted to even write what the experience was like going back to him. And I went into the office. I had an appointment, and the last time they had seen me, I was 80 pounds bigger in a body brace, dark circles, pasty skin, scowl on my face. They had actually put my folder in the dead file, and the he's not coming back group.
Like you were gone.
Like I was gone. They did not recognize me when I came in. It looked like a completely different human being.
Did they have to check your fingerprints to make sure it was you?
Yeah, or what? Check my ID. The doctor checked me out. No cancer. I told him the whole story, and he was more open to it than I thought he would be. And his conclusion was, whatever you're doing, keep doing it.
And you've continued doing it.
I've devoted my whole life. That's why I changed my name to Baba Ram. Founded with my new wife, the Deep Yoga School of Healing Arts. And we teach mastery of life in San Diego, where we're based. And I teach around the world. We do retreats and workshops. I work with major medical teaching universities now.
What's the reaction, groups. Brad, when you tell them this story? I mean, and we'll take calls next hour. What's the reaction to people? Are they in shock? Do they believe you? What do they say?
It's a mixed audience. You know, I'll speak at a major oncology conference, and you'll see half the doctors and staff sitting there with their arms folded.
Yeah, they don't want to hear this, right?
They don't want to hear it because it's not in their protocol. And then you see the other half leaning in, and they start to open to this. Integrative medicine, mind-body medicine is catching on, and now our science is starting to prove what they knew thousands of years ago, these ancient yogis in caves, is starting to prove that what they taught and what they practiced is real. And it's more and more taking hold now. And I've had the honor of working with hundreds and hundreds of students and clients now, and I have seen so many people change their lives and overcome major obstacles with their hearts, with obesity, with depression, with cancer. And that's really heartening. That's why I wrote the book. It's my story, but it's not about me. It's about the capacity, the inner power within all of us to take charge of our lives, to heal to our maximum potential, to turn obstacles into opportunities, and to ultimately express our fullest potential. It's our birthright. We've been disenfranchised from it, and it's time to reclaim it.
There's no question you tapped into something in the universe through this process. Did you do it accidentally, or did you know what you were doing?
Completely accidentally. I just started following that deeper voice inside of me. I got out of my head, and I got into my heart.
I got
into a deeper place of inner knowing that we all have, and I chose to listen.
And listen you did. Do you miss the broadcast journalistic part of your life?
You know, that's a great question. I was better compensated back then than what I do now. But I feel in a way I'm reporting the news now. I'm sharing the news of what's possible for all of us. I'm sharing the news.
You're also making the news.
Living our truth. And I'm writing books, and I'm teaching and lecturing. So I'm a journalist for a healthy lifestyle. I'm a journalist for body, mind, spirit medicine, for self-empowerment and personal transformation now.
Do you ever miss wanting to bite into that hamburger or anything like that?
You know, no, I don't. It's really funny because I used to love my steaks, and now they don't even smell good to me when someone else at a restaurant next to me is enjoying one. And I've gone a different way, and I just love it.
Tell me about yoga now. What exactly is it? Because we hear so many different parts of it. And by the way, the company that helps produce our television show, Beyond Belief, you've probably heard of being a yoga person, Gayam.
Yes.
They're in all kinds of yoga. But what is yoga?
Well, yoga postures we all think of as yoga are sort of a gateway into yoga. And they feel great because we get more flexible, more balanced and stronger, and we get more present with ourselves. But yoga is ultimately a journey. It means unification. It's unifying with that deeper self, and finding your spirit, finding your soul, finding that which unites all of us in consciousness. And its tools and techniques involve meditation and visualization, breath work, proper nutrition, and proper mindful lifestyle, getting ourselves more back into the rhythms of nature, walking a little more lightly on the earth. All of that supports us, and moving away as best as we can while still living our modern lives and having our careers and our family and our friends, getting away from a lot of the overstimulation in our culture.
So it's not just meditation, is it?
Not at all, and it's not just yoga poses. It's a complete, very rich and heavily detailed science. Its sister science is called Ayurveda, which means the science of life, and my new wife and I are both practitioners of that, and it's preventative medicine. You see the Ayurvedic doctor before you get sick, and they keep you from getting sick rather than running to get some prescription to mask your symptoms when you are sick.
You have literally, Brad, can I still call you that?
Oh, sure.
You've gone through an incredible metamorphosis, haven't you?
I have. My whole life has changed, and I would never go back. I think I'm a much better person than I ever was. I've really gotten over myself a lot. You know, being very type A, being a fast-paced, hard-charging journalist, you can get filled with hubris, and I really feel like I've let most of that go and come to a softer place, and then I'm more compassionate, and I'm more concerned about, you know, how can I serve rather than what's in it for me.
Had you not made this change when you did, would you be dead by now?
Absolutely, definitely, I would not be on planet Earth.
All done.
Of this, I have no doubt.
What is, for you now, one of your most enlightening stories that you've probably have helped other people, I'm sure?
I had a wonderful man come to me who had suffered in a high executive position. A lot of integrity, very popular, suffered 35 years of incredible insecurity and massive depression and been on heavy medications that were destroying his health. And in 6 months of embracing these practices, he was off medications for the rest of his life.
Isn't that amazing?
He's never been happier. And I've seen cases of people with diabetes and obesity change their diet and eat real food rather than this factory manufactured garbage in boxes and cans with additives and preservatives and pesticides and artificial colors, to eat real food and eat a little bit less food, get over the diabetes. They were told they would be on insulin all their lives. They're off of it.
Do you take supplements?
Cancer patients who no longer have cancer.
Do you take vitamins and supplements and things too?
No, I don't. Huh. I believe that you get what you need if you're eating really good, pure food.
Right. If you're not, you're going to need some help, I guess.
You're going to need some help.
So what do you tell people these days? What's your message these days, Brad?
That the greatest guru you will ever meet in your life is you. That you were born with power and potency and potential beyond what you think is possible. And it is there inside of you. And whatever you're facing in your life, no matter how daunting it might seem, it's a catalyst for positive change. You can turn it into an opportunity, and it will change your life in so many positive ways that, like me, you will look back, because I can say now, the loss of a great career, a broken back and failed surgery, stage 4 cancer, best things that ever happened to me.
Just remarkable. Are you a believer in God?
Oh, yes.
You do?
I wasn't before. I grew up in a family that was secular and had no position either way. And as a young man, I was agnostic and never had a religion. But I believe in spirit, and I believe that we're all part of that spirit. And just as Jesus said, the kingdom of God lies within. And I think my take on that is the guru is you.
Do you pray much?
Inside of you. I pray every day.
Is that in the form of meditation, or how do you do that?
Meditation, affirmation, mantra, let me be humble today, let me be peaceful, let me serve others, let me serve a higher power rather than me. You know, worrying is like praying for what you don't want. And when you pray, it's a positive affirmation. And you're seeing that there's a bigger picture than just your egocentric self. There's something much larger, and that you're part of that. And that, to me, is spiritual practice.
Through all this, Brad, you learned, of course, that there's incredible goodness on the planet, that there's the ability to tap into that. Did you ever come across the evil aspect of this, too? The fact that there is evil in this universe?
Oh, sure, and I saw so much of it as a war correspondent. So much evil in this universe. And, you know, this word, guru, that I've been mentioning, you know, of course. In Sanskrit, gu is darkness, and ru means light. And that's the whole story. What that basically says is that it always has been a universe filled with incredible darkness and evil, and filled with the divine. And the journey is moving towards the light, moving away from the goo and towards the roo.
You're in the technical world now. You even got some websites going.
I do. Deepyoga.com. Deep yoga, because we try to anchor back into the deeper practices. And Bhavaram.com. My name, as you said, B-H-A-V as in Victor, A-R-A-M.com, and you can learn about what we do, how to be in touch with us. You can get Warrior Post book, any major bookseller online or bookstores.
Sure. What do people want, Brad, when they come to see you? What do they need?
They want inner peace. They want to know who they really are. They want to peel away all the layers of the externalized self and finally come to a state of saying, I belong here on planet Earth. I'm okay.
Lots of lost people out there, huh?
There are. I was one of them.
But now you're found. Brad, we're coming back to take phone calls with you next.